Vengeful Waves. Once, in a time when the galaxy itself was still young and the stars burned bright with youthful vigor, there lived two races of amphibious people beneath the shifting waves of the planet Glee and Selm, the Nautilins and the Anselmi. The Nautilins were easily identified by their pale skin and hues of green, gray, or blue, their glistening eyes, and the coiling tentacles that stemmed from the back of their heads. While the Anselmi, although resembling their cousins, could easily be told apart due to their blue flesh and smooth pates, which were marked only by a pair of twitching antennae. For millennia, these two cultures had flourished, building great nations from the humblest of cave-dwelling origins until they had raised glittering underwater cities and colonized the ocean beds from the deepest trenches to the coral-encrusted shallows that lapped at the uninhabited islands and landmasses above. Even the ocean spirit looked on in awe at their achievements and was proud of its children for all they had done. For 1,000 years, there had been no disagreement between the two peoples. No war or infighting, no burgeoning fear or disrespect. Indeed, the Nautilins and the Anselmi were at peace and lived in harmony with one another and all the many creatures of the seas, from the greatest beast to the smallest crustacean. The Empress of the Anselmi and the Queen of the Nautilins had grown to be great friends, just as their mothers before them. And together, they had fashioned a culture of mutual respect between the two species that seemed unassailable. The two peoples shared much, cherishing each other's art, trading knowledge, and goods and affection. Both understood the need to preserve the status quo, as balance in all things was essential to their continued survival, and so too to the success of all the creatures of the sea. For this was the way of things on Glee and Selm, and the ocean spirit was duly pleased. However, left unchecked, success breeds greed, and for the greedy, possession leads only to the desire to possess more. So it was with the Anselmi, for as their nation flourished and their needs became ever greater, they began to look upon the Nautilins with envy. The seeds of this ill feeling took root and grew, for in the Nautilins, the Anselmi saw others who had laid claim to what might be theirs, farm beds that were more fertile than their own and dominion over territory that curtailed the Anselmi's own expansion, and they began to dream of how things might change and how the Anselmi might put their own future success over that of the Nautilins. The Nautilins were a generous, giving people, inclined to share their wealth and bounty. So when the ambassadors from the Anselmi Empress came to petition the court of the Nautilin Queen, she saw no reason to deny the Anselmi their wishes, and withdrew from the territory bordering their nation, gifting it to their needful neighbors. The Anselmi, instead of being grateful, saw only how swiftly the Nautilin Queen had capitulated and laughed at the Nautilin's naivety, thinking themselves clever and superior. The Anselmi took the new territory they had received, and in it they flourished. Yet as their numbers swelled, so did their sense of self-worth, and all the while they wished for more, always more, and their hunger seemed never to be sated. For what the Anselmi searched for was missing in their hearts and minds, not to be found beneath the waves of the ocean or amongst the farms and cities of the Nautilins. Time went on, and where once there had been nothing but peace between the two species, there was a growing sense of ill ease. As the Anselmi continued to expand and grow, they began to compete for resources with the Nautilins. And there were those among the Anselmi who believed that they should simply take what they needed, irrespective of their neighbors. While the Nautilins preached only peace, the philosophers of the Anselmi spoke of self-belief and the rights of the Anselmi above all others. The Anselmi people, for they had always been a proud folk and were easily coerced by the word of the Empress, slowly came to believe a great untruth, that the Nautilins were weak and ignorant, and less entitled, and that they had taken from the Insulmi the privilege and resources that should rightfully be theirs. Where once there had been love and mutual admiration, there was festering hate, and the Nautilans knew not what they had done to inspire such resentment from their neighbors. Soon, the Insulmi had laid claim to more of the Nautilan territory, threatening violence, and while the Nautilans wished to avoid war, they did not easily relent, for they had taken the measure of the Insulmi and seen in them a rising arrogance that threatened the balance of all things beneath the sea. Ambassadors were dispatched, for relations between the Insulmi Empress and the Nautilan Queen had grown increasingly tense, bearing a warning from the Nautilan people to their neighbors. In it, the Queen argued that if the Insulmi were to continue with their present ways, then the balance of all things would be upset, and the living spirit of the ocean would be gravely displeased and exact punishment upon its children. With an attitude of openness and admiration for her former friend, the Queen begged the Empress to cease her expansionist ways, for the Empress risked the very downfall of the Insulmi, as no one might claim dominion over the oceans and its fierce and powerful spirit. The Queen warned that the ocean spirit granted the believe to exist within its watery depths only so long as they strived to maintain the balance among all things, as well as they had both been taught. The Insulmi Empress scoffed at such a warning, for she had grown so arrogant as to believe that the Insulmi's self-imposed superiority set them apart from the great beasts and the tiny fish, from their neighbors, the Nautilans, and even from the ocean spirit itself. Despite their arrogance, the Insulmi understood that a war with the Nautilans would never be wise, for the Nautilans were great warriors, despite their disavowal of violence. So they sent the Nautilan ambassadors away with a message in reply that the Insulmi people claimed dominion over not only the ocean, but the lands above them too. They would prove their superiority to the Nautilans, and afterward, the Nautilans would be forced to admit the truth, and all of Glee Anselm would pay allegiance to the Insulmi people. The Nautilans remained concerned for the welfare of their neighbors and pleaded with the Insulmi to reconsider, but their warnings fell on deaf ears. As one, the Insulmi dragged themselves from the ocean's grasp, heaving themselves onto dry land. There, on a vast island in the middle of the ocean, the Insulmi found a place unspoiled by the touch of people, an island so large and so verdant that it might sustain them for countless centuries. The Insulmi had found what they desired, a perch from which they might look down upon the ocean and its creatures and know that they had mastered all. In the years that followed, the Insulmi adapted to their new way of life above the water, constructing a vast empire above the waves. Towering temples and spired cities were hewn from the very rocks, and their population grew to fill the shiny new streets and homes. They cared not for what they took from the land, for they had conquered it, and it was theirs. They dug deep mines and stripped natural resources and fed upon the fruit and animals of the land until they were plump and lazy. All the while, the Insulmi sneered at the Nautilans down in the cold embrace of the ocean and sent every ambassador back to them unheard. Soon, all contact with their former neighbors ceased, and the Insulmi laughed gleefully at how high they had climbed. Meanwhile, the Nautilans lamented the loss of the Insulmi, for they had once been loving neighbors and had lost their way. Still, the Nautilans held to their own territory, living a quiet, peaceful, and happy existence, and the ocean provided for them. They wanted for nothing other than the safe return of the Insulmi, although they feared the arrogance of the Insulmi might yet prove their undoing. Sure enough, despite the vast territory they had claimed, the Insulmi outgrew their island home, for they had built palaces and showgrounds for their leaders and stripped the earth of all of its treasures. Just as they had once coveted the territory of their neighbors, they now looked in envy upon the ocean itself, For what right did the ocean have to cover the land? Thus, in a great feat of engineering, the likes of which had never been seen before, the Anselmi raised a series of immense dams around their island, pushing back the ocean itself. They drained away the water to reclaim the land from the ocean's murky depths, and they built upon it, fashioning new, bigger homes and raising great statues in their own honor. Once the work was complete, the Anselmi looked upon it with great pride, for there was the absolute proof that they were superior to all things on Gli Anselm. Still, the Nautilans sent ambassadors bearing warnings, but those ambassadors were turned away unheard. For the Anselmi had by then forgotten what it was to have neighbors, and all thought of balance had long before been dismissed. Had the Anselmi heeded the warnings of the Nautilans, they might yet have come to understand the grave error of their ways. But in their arrogance, they were blinded, and in their blindness, they angered the ocean spirit. Enraged, the ocean spirit rose up against them, hurling vast tidal waves and storms over the dam so they crumbled and fell. And soon, the land the Anselmi had stolen had been taken back beneath the waves. Yet the ocean spirit wished to teach the people of Gli Anselm a lesson, so the waves did not stop. Crashing over the spires of Anselmi cities, flooding the streets, toppling the statues, and flushing the people themselves from their homes. It stormed without ceasing for days on end, until at last the ocean spirit was satisfied and once again fell calm, its work complete. Balance had been restored, and the Anselmi had been brought to their knees. Nothing of the island remained. A sunken domain, drowned beneath the tumultuous waves. All trace of the Anselmi Empire gone. The Anselmi, who had once deemed themselves superior to all others, had been reduced to a scarce few pockets of survivors, left to eke out an existence scavenging amongst the detritus of their former glory. Deep beneath the ocean, the Nautilans wept for the loss of their neighbors, for they had ever wished only to protect the Anselmi from themselves, knowing as they did that the balance had been disturbed and that the ocean spirit would not tolerate such a slight. The Nautilans remained in their cities beneath the waves, always mindful of the natural balance, and never again did the people of Gli Anselm defy the power of the ocean or attempt to deny their place in the order of all things.